This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles, and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired, entertained, and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-hosts Mike Mannion, Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and Susan Heppner, Arafa. We've got a great lineup of guests for you on our show today, including Glenn Bucko, President and Chief Investment Officer, West Financial Services, Cameron Hamilton, Principal of the McLean Group, Adam Ostrock, the Washington, D.C. Market President for Capital One Bank, and Paul Argy, President and CEO, Argy, Wilts, and Robinson. Like to introduce first Glenn Bucko, the President and Chief Investment Officer of West Financial Services. Glenn, what is West Financial Services? What do you guys do?
West Financial Services is what's called a wealth management firm, which is the term today used for a financial planning and investment management firm. We work with people in putting together balance sheets, income statements, their education planning, retirement planning, and work with them on their investments.
So you're helping people plan their financial future.
Yes. Many individuals in this particular area have great education levels, and there are a lot of successful people that need help, and from the standpoint that they don't have time to actually work and do these things on their own. So we sit in and work with them, advise them, give them some options, and help them get to where they want to go from a goal standpoint.
What kind of stuff are you looking at with these folks, with your clients?
Well, it runs the gamut all the way from cash flow, where they might bring in a bag full of receipts and things to look at, all the way up to succession in terms of business planning and mergers and acquisitions. But most of what we see are successful business folks that are nearing retirement. They're worried about whether or not they're going to be able to retire and how to get to retirement and then to make it through retirement for the rest of their life.
And I understand that you're compensated a little differently than most. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, we're fee-only, which basically means that we don't sell any products. And that's a little bit different. It's very common today, but when we started in 1982, it was actually very unusual. Virtually everybody was compensated through the sale of products, and that's something that has changed quite dramatically since we initially started the business.
How large or small is the firm?
We have 20 people, and revenue maybe about $5 million or so.
How'd you get a job with this company?
I actually started it with my partner. We worked together in the federal government, and neither one of us particularly liked working for the government at the time. And we both ran across this Certified Financial Planner program, which was relatively new, took it, and decided that this looked like a much more interesting business for us to be in.
Why would you start a firm with a partner? I mean, considering all the problems with partners and legal agreements and problems, and also you get to keep all the money for yourself if you do it yourself, why would you bother with a partner?
Well, we actually started, we'd worked the program together, and we actually started developing our own businesses. I had started mine, he had his, and a week after I had left government service, I got a call from him and said, hey, instead of doing this separately, why don't we do it together? And we really started from scratch, so that it wasn't all that difficult in terms of putting it together right up front, and that's the way it went.
Today has been such a difficult time the past couple of years. What have you had to do to adapt in terms of the role that you play? I would imagine for some families, they come in quite distraught and really needing a lot more from you than just financial advice. You must be having to give a lot of comfort and assurance to people today. Has that been challenging for you?
Well, that's something that we have provided since the beginning of the business. Actually, we're fairly high touch, and because we're a relatively small firm, we do give pretty customized advice. And the financial planning piece gets us not only into the investment work, but also into a lot of other issues that our clients and their families have. 2008 with the drop of the market certainly created a lot of angst and a lot of problems, particularly for those people who were just recently retired. If you retired in 2007 and thought that you were doing very well and then all of a sudden watched the market fall and were starting to draw down on those assets, you were literally afraid. And for, I think for most clients, though, the idea is that you had to work through the change that they were going through and basically give them the feeling that things would work out longer term.
Did the environment that you grew up in, did it serve you well in terms of being able to be adaptable? You seem like a very even-keeled kind of a guy. The situation like this would make a lot of people quite nervous in terms of their ongoing business and having to service clients. What was it like growing up in your family that gave you the confidence to be able to work with clients in the manner that you do?
Well, I was an only child, and that made me more self-sufficient, I think. Although, from a partner standpoint, I always wished that I had brothers and sisters, frankly. And my parents died rather young. My mother died in 1979, and my father in 1981.
It's a long time ago.
Before we started
this
business.
You're not a terribly old guy, right?
Not a terribly old guy, but it certainly put me on my own early on.
Right.
Glenn, how old were you when your parents passed?
My mother, I guess it would be 25.
Mm-hmm. And dad?
2 years later, so mm-hmm. 27, mm-hmm. and started the business then in 82.
So what effect did their passing have on your career?
Well, I think their passing put me in a situation where I felt like I really had to go out and make it on my own. I really didn't have anyone to fall back on. I really didn't have, as a lot of families would have, someone to even, in my family, for example, to talk to in terms of the decisions that I was making. So it really became, I had to make decisions for myself early on.
And I guess one of the reasons you wanted a partner was you needed somebody, an intimate relationship you could depend on and confide in.
I think it worked that way. Many times we would talk to each other. We had very different personalities, but in the end, it worked very well for us for a long period of time. And one of the more interesting things is when we would flip-flop. One would be thinking this way, I would be thinking the other way, and the next thing you know, it would go back and forth. Mm-hmm. And so it was always
a relationship, sure.
Yes.
In what way did your partner support you beyond just the obvious business partner relationship?
Well, I think from a family standpoint, it was nice to have he and his wife and his daughter there. Okay. In addition, there was a whole different circle of friends and also a whole different set of clients and his circle of friends also. So early on, we got together and did a lot of things. We used to bowl together, and then as a firm, a lot of that went through. We would play softball together and things of that sort. So we almost created a family out of the business and a group.
That was my question, Glenn. I mean, your desire for intimacy, your desire to have the right kinds of people around you, how has that affected your team building? And also, how has that benefited your client base?
I think team building is very important from the standpoint that nobody can do everything. And financial planning and investment management, you can never know everything. It's such a broad field.
Competitively, mm-hmm. how many are most of the firms that are fee-only firms the size of yours?
We're actually fairly large for a fee-only firm.
Why do you think that you're fairly large for a fee-only firm? What's it about you or your firm that's enabled that?
We always treated the firm as a business. It wasn't just me. It wasn't just him. It was the business as a whole. So if I have a client or brought in a client and Ron was and they needed something, Ron was there available for it. And the type of business that we had always meant that we had new problems coming in or new things that need to be dealt with.
I think one of the reasons that you may have grown this firm to be one of the larger fee-only firms is because you appreciate your team members, my bet is, as opposed to a cutthroat environment. It seems to me like you really like depending on your people, and my bet is that your clients know that they can depend on you as opposed to a transaction. It's a relationship. Am I right or wrong about that kind of stuff?
It's definitely a relationship. There's the transaction piece is taken out when you try to sell the products, and therefore everybody has to step in to help everybody else.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to dwell, but I want to go back to your father, because mm-hmm. I lost my father when I was quite young, and every day it continues to have an influence on me. I'm curious to know, what kind of work did your dad do? And I wonder, and I'm not trying to project how I feel, but every day I keep thinking my father is somewhere, and I can say to him, okay, did I do okay, or, you know, was it enough, or... Do you think I could live up to the expectations that you had of me as a little girl? Do you ever have those kind of feelings?
I think my father would be very proud of the business that was created. I think he would be very surprised, because he was an entrepreneur on his own. He was a carpenter, and he mm-hmm. had his own carpentry business. My mother was a telephone operator when they actually had such things as telephone operators. So from that perspective, I think he always wanted me to work with him as Bucko and Son, for example, in the carpentry business, but it didn't work out that way. And I, as far as I know, I was probably the first one in the family with his brothers and sisters to go to college. Mm-hmm. So that gave me an opportunity to do something different.
At what point did you realize, I'm a chief investment officer, meaning I've got the skills and the wiring to do that kind of work?
Well, it really became the issue for me when my partner retired in 2 years ago. So up until that time, he was chief investment officer, and I did most of the financial planning work for the firm, was responsible for that, did a lot of the client contact and business development. And the investment piece actually became my role as he retired. So I always did a lot of it, and we had a lot, all of the years I had a lot of experience in it, but it was not actually my responsibility with regard to those clients.
What is the website address for West Financial Services?
It's www.westfinancial.com.
We've been speaking with Glenn Bucko, the President and Chief Investment Officer of West Financial Services, here on Executive Leaders Radio with my co-host Mike Mannion, Sirius Interim Solutions, and Susan Heppner-Rapha. This is Herb Cohen. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight.
Hi, this is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and this is your business spotlight. Today's guest is...
Jennifer Trax.
Jennifer, who are you with?
I'm with RG, Wiltsey, and Robinson.
And what is RG?
RG is a full-service public accounting firm. So we do assurance, tax, business consulting services for corporations, nonprofit organizations, and individuals.
There's a whole lot of accounting firms out there. What makes you guys different?
I truly believe, and it's said quite a bit, but I truly believe it is our people. We offer our people an opportunity for growth. We've got a culture of entrepreneurship. And because of that, people are really inspired to succeed, and that helps the firm succeed. A lot of firms say it, but we truly do offer our clients kind of the technical expertise of a big firm. More than two-thirds of our partners are Big Four, come from the Big Four, and I myself came from the Big Four. So I can say that the culture we have really is one of technical excellence. But yet it comes in a small firm package, and the touches that we give our clients are really second to none.
Speaking of touches, you give your employees a great work-life balance. Tell us about that.
We do. I think starting from the top with Paul Argy, he really knew that in order for us to succeed, we had to hire the best people. And in an area where we really live to work, unfortunately, we want to be able to inspire those people, motivate them, and allow them to succeed. And we know that they've got other lives. And so we have flexible work arrangements right from the top on down. I myself am on an arrangement where I don't work on a Friday.
And that was your two-minute spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, my co-host, Mike Mannion, Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and Susan Heppner from RAFA. I'd like to introduce Cameron Hamilton. Cameron's a principal with the McLean Group. Cameron, what is the McLean Group? What do you folks do?
Yeah, McLean Group is an investment bank with two specialties in M&A advisory work, merger and acquisition work, and valuation advisory work. We help middle market and lower middle market companies with exit planning all the way through the execution of those. We have a presence nationally, but we're headquartered here in Northern Virginia. And I've been growing rapidly over the last 10 years.
How did you get a job with this firm? How long have you been with the McLean Group?
I started my career coming out of college at the end of the bubble. Worked with a small software firm doing mergers and acquisitions and capital raises just in time to see the crash happen We filed our S-1 to go public in January of 2000. The market crashed. And after the CFO and I wound some of the programs down, I said, it's going to be a little bleak financial world here. And the CFO knew one of the partners in the McLean Group at the time, one of the founders. And so I came over there shortly thereafter and have been there ever since 2001.
So what are you supposed to be doing at the McLean Group? What's your job look like? What do you do there?
So I'm a co-leader of our firm's federal contracting M&A practice. We support clients across the intelligence community, defense departments, and the civilian agencies. And we'll help them from many years prior to exit all the way through that exit event, whether that's from their first stock option plans and their first the first issues they run into as a growing business, and then all the way through the execution of that sale event. As well, along that, we'll also help companies that want to be on the other side, that want to buy companies, that want to grow faster, that want to do things. And so we'll help people with both organic and inorganic growth strategies.
So it seems to me like there's a lot of technical aspects to what you do. It sounds it's like what are you really good at doing? I mean, why do people like dealing with you? What's good about you?
There's a couple parts to we have folks come in and interview all the time for summer positions, and they always ask, well, I've got a degree in finance and a degree in this and a degree in that, and my background was an electrical engineer that turned into an economics major. But I always kind of joke with them, and I talk to them, I said, I should have got a degree in psychology. I should have actually come, because about half of my, half your daily job when you do this, you cannot underestimate. You've kind of got a little bit of background in enough in law and tax law and acquisition law and transaction law to be a bit dangerous there. But counsel needs to do their job. Same thing in accounting. You've got to look at a balance sheet and understand. You got to be able to look at a cash flow statement and a P&L statement to understand what's going on. But then fundamentally, the biggest part of what we do is we help companies package. What is special about somebody? So what have you built? You've done your sweat equity. You've built a company over 2 or 10 or 20 years, and you're about to retire, or you're about to transition it to somebody else. It's not your baby growing up, but it's not that afar. There's a lot of emotions involved, and there's a process you have to go through. And so, working with business owners to come up with that strategy to present it, to package it, and get ready, and then go ahead and find that marriage. We use a lot of marriage analogies in our work, and so finding that right partner going forward is for me the really fun part.
How young were you when you realized that you understood people?
Great question. I mean, I think I first found out that I enjoyed figuring out what made people tick when I was hired to do my first swim lesson when I was became in high school on the swim team, and I was probably 15, and some unsuspecting parent signed me up for a half an hour swim lesson to help their 6 to 10 year old become better at swimming, and I found out that I had a lot of fun with that. But I also figured out that you couldn't go into any lesson the same way. There were kids that you had to bring the mom or dad over and bribe them with the next Lego present, and then there's ones who were just scared because you had this 18-year-old in the pool with you, and then there's ones that just wanted a good job every time. And so as I found, I really enjoyed coaching, and that's something that I did for another 10 years after college. That was really what started that, is just an interest in finding out what made people tick.
You're very well educated, you're very articulate. What was it like growing up in your house? Did your parents encourage a certain level of education? What sort of a culture? You were involved in sports, but what message came to you from your parents?
My parents both actually have PhDs. And they both used them and became public servants. My father actually was at West Point until he realized that he didn't see a place in the Army that this just before Vietnam for what he wanted to do in the in really kind of the not medicine but the scientific area. And so he transferred out and met my mom, fortunately, at Michigan State. And my dad got a PhD in biophysics, and my mom got one in biochemistry. And so then my mom went to work for the FDA, and my dad spent 35 plus years at Langley, not telling me what he did. And but that level of education was something that was always impressed upon me from the beginning. Not missing school, doing well. I ended up I was a proverbial nerd as a kid, no doubt about it.
Stereotypically, PhDs are not the breeding ground for good communication and people skills. Stereotypically, where did yours come from?
probably some of that interaction with swimming and with sports. I mean, I found that while I was good in academics, you know, my closest friends were all on sports teams. I was, you know, whether it was a soccer player, whether it was a swimmer, I loved those interactions. And I was, you know, I was the kid out on the street as soon as I could done with my homework, biking or skateboarding or whatever I was going to do that day. And that was something that just communication with people around you is something that was, you know, was important to me early on. We didn't do a lot of socializing as a family with a lot of folks. My father wasn't really allowed to be out and doing a lot of stuff. We weren't traveling to other countries. We weren't doing that stuff. So, looking back, it was actually a great mix for me to through self kind of grow my own self confidence to go out and learn that stuff on my own.
Where did the entrepreneurial skills come from?
That's a great question. I think, ironically enough, looking back, I'll be honest, I hated the fact growing up that my father would come home from work after a long day, and the questions would all be at you. So me and my two little sisters, how was your day? Because he couldn't talk about his day. My mom retired when my little sister was born. So the questions were all at me. And I was, where's the other way? But now, you know, looking back on that, what is so great and finally understood, but it took me through college to understand that my dad never talked one way or the other about what he did and that takes a lot of confidence not to have to go home and talk about how proud you are or what went wrong and what went bad. And so a lot of the entrepreneur and actually interest came from actually looking back and saying, if my father is a PhD and how smart he was, can do something and be so successful and not feel any need to talk about it, not feel anything – well, that ought to give me a lot of confidence to go out and strike out. And if I fail, I fail. But, you know, guess what? The whole world isn't going to care about it. They're going to, you know, I'll take it and I'll learn from the next one.
With this merger and acquisition stuff, is there more opportunity tomorrow or is there more opportunity yesterday? Is it a dying field?
Great question. For me, the last 10 years have been great. I specialize in federal contracting since 9/11. We've had an era of growth in federal budgets, a growth in outsourcing. That obviously we've had some major structural and deficit issues that we've got to deal with over the coming years, and so we're going to see some industry things change over the coming years. But we're also coming up on really the start of the first wave, and we're into it of the baby boomers retiring. So businesses that were started from the baby boomers are just coming into the increase. So we believe as a firm, we're on an expansion path nationally to try and capture on some of this, that there's an awful lot of lower middle market businesses that will be sold over the coming decade, and trying to put ourselves in a position to take advantage of that.
Well, so why would an entrepreneur want to engage your services? What's the benefit of your services to the entrepreneur?
Use a couple great analogies again. Whether it's a realtor of your house, if you want to hire somebody that knows the marketplace, we come in and we do a few things. Often the entrepreneur is going to have to work for a buyer, especially if that company is associated with that entrepreneur. So there's going to have to be a transition period. They're not going to want to buy a company and watch the assets walk out the door on Friday, especially if it's a services business. So one role we play is separating the good cop from the bad cop. You keep the relationship and the working relationship intact with the buyer as you do it. You allow somebody to spend all the time that it takes to go through a process. Typical process takes about 6 to 8 months. I don't know a lot of entrepreneurs and CEOs that have 6 to 8 months to dedicate to doing something like this. So we spend often, 500,000, 1,500 hours on engagements over the course of an engagement to work through, might be 20, it might be 2,000, might be 200 buyers, and scull it down to that one that's final, and then going through that whole process of the negotiation, of the understanding, so they make sure they don't leave any value on the table. And fundamentally, the best thing for them about it is to understand, did they get full value for what they created? Did I test not just the people that know me, but maybe somebody in a tangential industry that's looking to expand into the federal marketplace or into the one I am? So understanding that at the end of the day, being able to look back on that career path that you just had and be very happy with it, that's a great thing. That's what we're here for.
And your specialty in the firm is?
It is federal contracting. So I work with firms that do work for the federal government. They might be prime contract holders. They might be subcontractors to the big Northrops and Lockheeds of the world. But we typically work with about $5 to $10 million companies all the way up to $150, $200 million companies.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. What is the website address for McLean Group?
www.McLean, M-C-L-E-A-N, LLC.com.
Excellent. We've been speaking with Cameron Hamilton, the principal at the McLean Group here on Executive Leaders Radio, with my co-host Mike Mannion, Sirius Interim Executive, and Susan Heppner-Raffa. This is Herb Cohen. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight.
Hi, this is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and this is your Business Spotlight. Today's guest is
Barbara Saylor.
Barbara, who are you with?
I'm with Capital One Financial Corporation.
And Capital One Financial Corporation does what?
We're a full service financial services company based in McLean, Virginia. We're also a national top 10 bank and the largest commercial and consumer bank headquartered in the greater Washington, D.C. region.
So you are not a credit card company only?
We are not.
Well, tell us about that.
Well, we have a geographic footprint with our banking services that range from the Northeast in the greater New York City region to here in the greater Washington, D.C. metropolitan region, all the way down south to Louisiana and Texas.
Is a bank a bank a bank, or is there something special about your bank?
I think there are a lot of things special about our bank, from the way we engage our associates to the way we engage with the community.
What sort of customers would be an ideal customer for your bank?
I think all kinds of customers. We serve everyone from average residents of our communities to small businesses to other corporations.
What do you like best about working there, Barbara?
I love opportunities to give back to the community. Capital One is very supportive of associate volunteerism, not only in the community with nonprofit organizations, but also allowing us to donate our talents and our specific areas of expertise through pro bono service.
Give us your website, please, Barbara.
We are www.capitalone.com.
And my name is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim, and that was your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Mike Mannion, Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and Susan Heppner-Raffa. I'd like to introduce Adam Ostrak. Adam is the Washington, D.C. market president for Capital One Bank. Now, I've seen these signs. What is Capital One Bank, Adam?
Capital One is a top 10 nationwide financial institution and the largest bank headquartered in the Washington, greater Washington, D.C. area.
The largest bank headquartered in this area. How many branches? How many employees?
We have about 1,000 branches in, nationwide and
bank.
Over 250 in the region.
Wow. Now, tell us, you're the Washington, D.C. market president for Capital One Bank. What are you supposed to be doing for a living? What are you supposed to be doing 9 to 5 or 7 in the morning till midnight? Or what's that look like?
My day job is to manage the middle market business for the company, which is providing banking products to companies with sales of $10 to $250 million, commercial loans, various depository products, and financial products in general for companies
of
that size.
So you're helping businesses, middle market companies, what size to what size?
$10 million to $250 million. That's our target market. We go outside that sometimes.
And with a wide variety of banking needs,
yes.
It sounds like. Mm-hmm.
You said that was your day job. What's your night part of the job?
I'm the Washington, D.C. market president, where I manage the company's philanthropic activities for Washington, D.C. itself.
Philanthropic activities? What do you mean philanthropic activities?
Well, Capital One is one of the most philanthropic companies in the country. In fact, in 2010, we gave 700 grants and had 60,000 volunteer hours. And between Capital One and Chevy Chase Bank, which we purchased in 2009, as you know, which was also very philanthropic, we make up really a philanthropic powerhouse. And so there's a lot of
Capital One really gives back to the community, it sounds like. Tell us, let's talk about you as a kid. How young were you when you started working and started earning money?
I started with a paper route in Chelmsford, Massachusetts at age 9.
Age 9. And whose idea was it for you to get this paper route? Was it that you wanted to buy something and mom or dad said to you, listen, you go get your own money? Or
No, it was really my idea. It was offered to me, and I decided I wanted to do it. My mother didn't want me to do it. I think my father was okay with it, but I kind of hung in there, forced the issue, and started with 8 papers, and over the years expanded to over 100 papers.
So what would you do with all the money you earned?
I
put it in the bank, right?
I saved some. I bought myself a bicycle, and I I spent some. But in those days, if you had a dollar to spend, it was a lot.
So you learned how to allocate your money at an early age.
Absolutely.
And this banking thing, how young was this when you got into your when it got into your blood? I mean, was it, when you were a little boy, did you decide you wanted to be a banker one day? And what did you go to college for?
No, I didn't really get into banking, or I didn't really have an idea that I wanted to be a banker until I got into college at Adelphi University. They had a program in banking and money management, which was the best program in the business school. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really know what I wanted to do, so I decided to apply for the best program, mm-hmm. and from there I went into banking.
Well, what do you like about banking? I mean, what do you like about your job?
I like the personal relationships with everyone, with the associates, with the clients, with the centers of influence. It's mm-hmm. all about people.
How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I'm an only child.
An only child. So what makes an only child special, or how did being an only child help prepare you for your business career?
Well, the special attention that I got from my parents, who I got focus from both parents. My mother was... managed Alston Temporary Services for New England in the 1970s, which was kind of a breakthrough position for a woman in the 1970s in a job like that. And my father was a college professor. So I got a lot of business training from my mother, and I got the educational training from my father.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel different than other 9 or 10-year-olds earning money, having money?
Yes, very different. I was the only one who had money, my own money.
So what was that like, or why was that meaningful?
It was fun to be able to spend your own money, and I was popular. It was meaningful because it helped me learn about business at a very, very young age compared to my peers.
I'm curious, at that time, as you indicated, having a mom who was full-time working mom was a bit unusual. What kind of an influence did that have? Did you come home to an empty house at the end of the day, or was your mom able to manage her schedule to be there for you?
In those days we called it junior high school and high school, I did come home to an empty house. But I had played sports when I got older, and I understood that my mother had a career, and it didn't impact her ability as a mother or her devotion to me at all.
It sounds like that. You speak very lovingly about the influences that they had on you, and having a mom who was a working mom who fulfilled all the motherly duties and was right there for you as you grew up, in thinking about your own life and family, did that set a certain tone for you, how your parents, A, dealt with you, and also living in an environment where you had a successful mother in the business world? Very unusual.
The work ethic. In college, I was in a job for a month, and they asked me to be a manager. They asked me to be a resident assistant. I always had a very strong work ethic to this day, which is something that I want to instill with my children.
What do you mean? Tell me more about that.
My parents always worked and always taught me that if you're going to do a job, do it right. Be committed and make sure to do the background work that's necessary to make sure that you're good at what you do.
Yeah, as the Washington, D.C. market president for Capital One Bank, how many people report to you?
Well, we have a very unusual reporting system, so mm-hmm. the people that I work with on a day-to-day basis in my philanthropic role don't mm-hmm. report to me. Mm-hmm. I manage a round table, and the round table manages the bank's philanthropic activities. So mm-hmm. there are 15 mm-hmm. or 20 people on the round table. Mm-hmm. And it's a big job, mm-hmm. But they don't. They come from all different parts of the bank. Some work in retail, mm-hmm. some work in mm-hmm. Capital One mm-hmm. Credit card business. Mm-hmm. Some work in community relations.
How about as the market president? How large is the staff that's reporting to you?
Again, it's really the round table mm-hmm. and support from different areas of the bank. They don't actually mm-hmm. report directly to
it
me.
It sounds to me
jobs.
Like it's a pretty interesting, pretty innovative environment. At Capital One. We have with us Barbara Saylor. Barbara is corporate communications for Capital One Bank. Barbara, what's it like working with Capital One Bank?
It's great working with Capital One Bank. It's the kind of environment where one day I might be supporting a market president at a public speaking engagement. Another day I might be working with our community relations department on the opening of a new financial education center here in Fairfax.
So there's many facets to this Capital One Bank. I didn't understand that there is a giving back component, but certainly sounds like there is. And Adam, I guess part of what you're doing as the market president is actually interacting directly with certain clients. Am I correct about that?
Yes, that's more on the business side.
Mm-hmm. And when you're working with these clients, I guess what you're doing as the market president is you're getting financial statements and saying yes or no, right?
Well, it's a little more than that, but that is a part of it.
Well, give me the truth about what you really do when it comes to working with the clients.
I manage the business development activities, and it's a very challenging business development role because we'll call on companies for, in some cases, years before we get an opportunity to bank them. And then we have to get their financial statements and say, well, slow down, because we have to look at your financial statements and determine whether or not we're going to actually make the loan and negotiate the terms and conditions under which we're going to make
the loan. So it's really developing relationships with people. That sounds like it's a big chunk of what you're doing.
It is a relationship banking mm-hmm. job, without a doubt.
The negative environment that's existed for the past couple of years surely has made your job much more challenging, especially the closer the relationship with some of these clients. How have you had to adapt in terms of your everyday business dealings with some of those clients that you might have been banking for a long time who've suddenly run into significant problems?
Well, you need to look at the financial statements with a different eye and understand that companies went through a very difficult period in 2008 and 2009 and assess whether or not they're likely to make it out of that period. But for the most part, well-run middle-market companies fared fairly well during the Great Recession.
Adam, in the green room, you mentioned that you had to start your career over again. Tell us about that.
I worked 29 years in New York. I came here in November, and in 2005, I ran the largest middle market division for a major bank in the New York area, which was purchased by another bank, and they were interested in the accounts, not the people. And so as a manager of managers, I had to go and really start my career over. I went to North Fork Bank, which was later purchased by Capital One, and I was successful at North Fork because I was able to bring many of the people and many of the clients with me.
So was this a blessing or a curse that you had?
Best thing that ever happened to me in my career.
Tell us more about that. Why?
Well, the bank that I was with is obviously not committed to the middle market business. They sold it, and I went to a bank that was very committed to the middle market business, and then we were soon purchased by a bank that is highly committed to, very interested and focused on mm-hmm. the middle market business. So it gave me the opportunity to go from an organization where we had minor resources, almost no resource, to an organization that throws a tremendous amount of resources at my mm-hmm. business.
Adam, what is the website address for Capital One Bank?
CapitalOne.com.
That's easy enough. It's www.CapitalOne.com?
Yes.
We've been speaking with Adam Osterak, the Washington, D.C. Market President for Capital One Bank, with my co-host Mike Mannion, Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and Susan Heppner, Rafa. This is Herb Cohen. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight.
Hi, this is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and this is your Business Spotlight. Today's guest is?
Nicholas Pittis.
Nicholas, who are you with?
I am with the Government Services Group of Wells Fargo Capital Finance, which is an operating division of Wells Fargo Bank.
All right, tell us what you do.
I am in the we lend to government contractors. We provide accounts receivable financing.
Great, and what makes you unique?
Well, first of all, we work exclusively with government contractors. Second is that by lending against the accounts receivable, we're able to provide more capital than our customers can typically secure through other financing sources.
And you personally, what do you enjoy most about that kind of work?
Closing. Mike, once we've closed and established a new credit facility that gives our customers the financing they need to succeed, there's a great amount of satisfaction knowing that we've just helped someone. When we close on a new customer, it should be a win-win for everyone.
Would you tell us a success story, please, Nick?
Well, earlier this year, we were able to establish a credit facility for a shareholder buyout. The owner had offered to buy out the other two shareholders about 2 years ago, and after searching for the capital for almost 2 years, our accounts receivable financing solution was the right financial product at the right time.
Tell us about your employees.
Teamwork is at the core of Wells Fargo culture. All the team members within the government services group work together as a team to support government contractors.
And why is it a great place to work? In a few words.
One of Wells Fargo's top vision and values is the belief that people are their competitive advantage.
Nick, give us your website, please.
www.wellsfargo.com.
And this has been Mike Mannion with Sirius Executive Solutions, and that's your Business Spotlight.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Mike Mannion, Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, Susan Heppner-Raffa, and our guest, Paul Argy. Paul is the president and CEO of an organization known as Argy, Wiltsey, and Robinson. And Paul, what do you guys do? What do you guys do for a living?
We are a full-service CPA firm that is one of the largest now in the nation. We're number 68th in the nation. And we're full-service covering both audit, tax, and consulting services for government contractors, tech companies, nonprofits, real estate, and many other types of service organizations.
How old is this firm?
It's 19 years old.
19 years old. And how did you get a job with this company?
I actually started it in 1991.
Wait a minute. You founded the firm 19 years ago, and now it's the number 68th largest accounting firm in the country?
That's correct. And we're also, I'm proud to say that we are on the best of the best list for 6 years in a row.
In terms of quality?
Yes. There's only 20 firms in the United States that are on the so-called best of the best list by Inside Public Accounting, and we've done it for 6 years
Wait
in a row.
Wait a minute. You're telling me that you've got one of the largest accounting firms in the country that you started 19 years ago, and its quality is there. This must have had a devastating toll on your personal life.
Actually, I balanced it out pretty well. I was fortunately enough that I have four kids, and I left Price Waterhouse in 1990. And when I left there, it was starting this firm was kind of a God's greatest blessings or unanswered prayers. And I didn't make partner at Price Waterhouse because the division that I was in was closed. So I made the best of it and started my own firm. And when I decided to do that, I had four kids, and I wanted to have work-life balance. That's something that you don't see much of in a Big Four accounting firm. So in doing so, I decided also to get involved in coaching. So I coached my kids through sports and for the last 18 years until they all went off to high school and college.
So you managed to build one of the fastest growing and largest accounting firms in the country, and its quality is there because you won the award, and you're telling me you have a work-life balance.
Well, I'm very proud of that, and that's something that I've actually found that doing things like coaching helped me keep a good perspective of things. It also helped me to become a better leader and a better person to understand people. And understand what number one for me was you have to hire the best and the brightest, and you let them do what they're best at. I'm not one of the smartest people in the world, but I'm smart enough to know that I've got common sense to hire really good people around me and give them the authority and the direction to do what they're best at.
I'm trying to figure this out now. Now, is there any similarity between the coaching you did with your kids and building one of the largest accounting firms with quality in the country? Is there any similarity?
Absolutely. Almost everything I do on a day-to-day basis with regard to running this firm is very much what I learned from coaching sports.
What are you talking about? Give me more about this.
Motivating them. Like, for instance, if someone's not giving you 100%, saying, you know, you're not giving me 100%, you can do better. Or if they are
doing a
really
good job. Wait a minute. I thought somebody, you're the boss, though. Did you just tell them? Like, no, you just yell at them, right?
No yelling. Yelling's not the right way to do it.
Really?
You know, the best thing to do is just to tell them that they can give you a little bit better and to do it in an encouraging manner. Or if they're doing a good job, of course, you pat them on the back and say, great job, and make sure you say it all the time because that's a good way to keep people inspired.
This is interesting. Tell me about how many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have two older sisters.
Two older. So you're the youngest of three?
Yes.
Uh-huh. So what was it like growing up the youngest of three, and how did that affect your business career?
Well, actually, it worked out really well because being the youngest and also the only boy, I was spoiled somewhat, but I looked up to my sisters, and my one was 10 years older than me, and the other one was 5 years older, and they took different paths in life, and one of them was very successful and got through college and had a really good teaching career, and the other one didn't do so well, and I get to learn from the good and the bad. And so when it's my turn to come up through high school and go to college, I decided I wanted to follow the track of my older sister, and she was a very good role model for me.
So it sounds to me like you know that you don't have all the answers. In fact, it sounds like to me one of your strengths are from your childhood is that you've got this innate confidence. Maybe it's from growing up being the youngest of three and the boy. But you don't seem to be the kind of guy that thinks he's got all the answers. And it sounds to me like you probably are the type of fella that likes to look at everything that's going on and pick out the best practices. I'm wondering if that's true, because you know it better than most of us. I mean, you've built one of the fastest growing and largest accounting firms in the country.
Yes, and I definitely focus on trying to look at the bright side of everything. I'm an optimist, and I try to play on everyone's strengths.
If I was doing a good interview, what have I not brought out that the public needs to know about how you've managed to hit the ball out of the park?
It's all about hiring the right people, best and the brightest. And I really say that my success is really the firm's success, and the firm's success is all about the people I've hired and what a great job they've done for our firm.
We have with us Jennifer Trax. Jennifer is the Director of Practice Development at the firm. Jennifer, what's it like working with him?
Actually, it's a fantastic place to work.
Why is that?
Well, the culture is one of entrepreneurism. And truly, whether it's for our clients or for a practice like mine, where we're really the mouthpiece of the firm, the marketing department, the PR agency, you know, the external
kind
of
face of the firm. Does Paul give you your head? Does he give you the opportunity of running with your ideas?
He really does. Mm-hmm. What's great about it, I sit right next door to Paul. Mm-hmm. And so there's not a lot of red tape. I can say that we talk, and I think a lot of firms say that they can bring the technical expertise.
Why do the clients like you guys? Why do the clients, when you're going after new clients, why is it easy to reel them in?
It's relationships.
What do you mean?
We did some surveys, even before we rebranded, that asked our clients and those who kind of give us work and with whom we work, other referral sources, what makes us unique. And in every case, they said, it's the relationship we have at the highest levels of the firm.
Susan, I think you had a question. Mm-hmm.
I did. I'd like to get back to the fact that at a young age that you brought extraordinary insight to the balance that you needed to have in your life. Tell us about how you grew up and your parents and the influence that they had on you that reinforced to you that you were going to set a certain path for yourself in terms of your own children and your own family.
Well, I come from two parents that went through World War II as well as the Depression, and they instilled in me a lot of the core values. And my father was very supportive and very much a believer in me. I couldn't do anything wrong in his eyes. And my mother was very good at the basics of you know the penny saves, the penny earned, and the fundamentals of saving and things like that. And as a result of that, those are things that they were very close to me, and I cherished the family side very much. And so when I had kids, that was important to me. I wanted to be close to my children, and I felt that the best way for me to be close to my children, since I was working a lot, was for me to get involved in coaching sports. And what I found, though, was that it not only helped me become close to my children, it also helped me learn in lots of other ways. I interact with other children, interact with parents, become a leader in many other ways, and develop my leadership skills, because a lot of things that I tried and did on the coaching side of the house, I was able to perfect and become better at and help me in the business world.
Your mom and dad did not meet in this country, and your dad also suffered an injury. Tell us a little bit about that story.
Yeah.
And the impact it had.
Actually, my parents were, my mom was a war bride from World War II. They met in London, England. And they got married when my mom was 18, and she was shipped back to the United States to live with my father's Greek family in order for protection, because they were bombing London at the time. And my father was actually it was a fortune injury in a way, because he was in London and where the bombing was going on, and a bomb landed close to him and blew out his eardrum, and so he got released after about a year. Obviously, it could have been a lot worse than just a eardrum. So that's how they met, and that's how they came back to the United States and the rest is history.
Well, how did that affect you?
I think the most effect of it is the conditions for which they grew up in. Those things are what the principles for which they live by and which were passed on to me.
What were the principles?
Well, you know, when you live out in the Depression, you're careful about, you don't throw away food, and you watch every dollar you spend, and those sort of key principles of you cherish your family, because, you know, war times, you go through a lot of stress, and you realize that people, you got to be close to the people who you're closest mm-hmm. with.
How, when it comes to the firm, R.G. Wiltsey and Robinson, how high is up?
There's no limit. In fact, our firm right now, we've grown, we doubled in size every 4 years, and we are on a path of double in size again. We're just doing $50 million. We're going to do $100 million in 5 years.
Boy, it's a lot more difficult to go from 25 to 50 than 50 to 100. I mean, as you get bigger, it's more difficult to continue to grow. You're doing it.
Actually, I think it's going to be easier because the name's out there, and we've got great people, and we got a great foundation. It's not like I'm starting by myself with a card out there, and I'm saying who I am, and people say, RG, who's RG, you know, mm-hmm. and never heard of you before. Mm-hmm. So it's actually, I think, it's a lot easier. We got a lot of momentum. We got a lot of really great people right now who are working for us.
What is the website address for RG?
www.argy.com.
We've been speaking with Paul RG, President and CEO of RG Wiltsey and Robinson, as well as we've had the opportunity of speaking with Glenn Bucco, President and Chief Investment Officer of West Financial Services. Cameron Hamilton, Principal of the McLean Group, Adam Osterak, Washington, D.C. Market President for Capital One Bank, and again, most recently, Paul Argy, President and CEO of Argy, Wiltsey & Robinson. This is Herb Cohen. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, Mike Mannion, Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and Susan Heppner-Raffa, for giving me a hand structuring the questions, hopefully providing our listening audience an educational and entertaining show. I'd like to thank our audience for listening. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com. To learn more about our executive leaders, and thank you for joining us today. Have a nice day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on Federal News Radio. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on Federal News Radio. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
Tired of playing catch-up with the news? Stay informed all the time with the Federal News Flash. The Federal News Flash is a daily email from Federal News Radio that will bring you the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Find out about exclusive stories and interviews only heard on Federal News Radio. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, the only radio station dedicated to news for and about the federal government and government contractors. Find us at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio in a Web 2.0 world. Find Federal News Radio on Facebook and Twitter. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio or join the Federal News Radio group on Facebook. Chat with our team and make connections with others in the federal arena. Email us at fnrcomment@federalnewsradio.com. Visit our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
Okay, here goes. I know more about cooking dinner for a party of 12 than I do about packing a lunch for a 12-year-old. I know kids like things like PB&J, pigs in a blanket. Oh, and fish sticks. They do love fish sticks. Filets I get, but sticks? What part of the fish does the stick come from? I know I can read a cookbook that'll tell me how to make a red wine reduction, but where are the cookbooks that can teach me how to cut the crusts off bologna sandwiches? Oh, maybe we can compromise on mac and cheese. Can you make that with brie? Everybody likes brie, right?
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to push your food around their plate. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.